Cause that's the bottom line.
Greetings, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Wednesday, January 18th edition of the Bottom Line Lexington Podcast. On today's show, Kentucky wins at Mississippi State in a game that set basketball back a few years. The prestigious New Yorker magazine questions John Calipari's recruiting tactics. A mid-major coach doesn't want to shake hands after he loses. How Ohio State football just got even better. How one new NFL coach has already sabotaged his new job before it even started. A movie that does not need to be remade. A movie we can't wait to watch. The Hall of Fame announces their new class today, and we have our opinions on a couple of guys who should get in. And once again, we scour the college basketball world trying to find a winner. And of course, we found one. So let's go.
You are listening live.
Kentucky 88, Mississippi State 81. In a game in which there were 52 fouls called on both teams. A lot of people on social media from the Kentucky side were complaining about the fouls, but Mississippi State committed 28 compared to Kentucky's 24. Sasha Kalea-Jones played less than 1 minute, and all he has in his box score is two fouls. But Kentucky survives in a game in which the analytic nerds at ESPN said that the lowest win probability percentage that Kentucky had during the entire game was 91.3%, and that was when it was 2-2 a minute into the game. People were worrying about Kentucky blowing this lead, and with 12 minutes to go, Kentucky led by 18. But this game was never in doubt, despite TV Teddy Valentine and his cast of characters trying to ruin this game by calling so many fouls. De'Aaron Fox, 21 points, but he was not the best player on the floor last night. That will go to Wenyen Gabriel, 13 points, 8 rebounds, and 3 block shots, backing up his 16-rebound performance last weekend. Worst player on the floor for Kentucky? Malik Monk. Oh, but he had 14 points. Well, he also shot 5 of 14 from the field and threw in 5 turnovers to boot. But Kentucky never trailed in this game, despite Mississippi State shooting 54.2% from the field. And in all of Kentucky's SEC games now, the average number of fouls called on both teams combined in all SEC games is 45.7. By the way, they only play 40-minute games in college basketball. So that's over a foul a minute. There was a little scuffle towards the end of the game, and of course, Calipari, after the game, says that his team needs to be smart. Calipari also not very happy with his team, saying he thought his team was about a month away, and now he thinks they're about 2 months away. By the way, 2 months from today is the first round of the NCAA tournament. Perfect timing, huh? But Calipari made a few more headlines yesterday. The elegant New Yorker magazine, which has been around forever, interviewed Cal, and when he was asked about the allegations of him paying players in the past or now, he defiantly came back and said, "Why do they say I have to buy players? All my players are millionaires, and they go to the NBA. And he's right. Calipari's players this year alone in the NBA, not anything going forward, just this season, Calipari's players will earn $172 million combined this year. That's a lot of money. I don't see Duke alumni making $172 million. Who are the three most polarizing figures in college basketball this year? Calipari, Coach K, Grayson Allen. It's no coincidence that all three of those are associated with Duke or Kentucky in some fashion. Because when you're the best and you're always the best at something, people are going to come after you. FanRag.com came out with an article today saying that Calipari is all that's right about college basketball. Now, I don't know about that. There's a vacated Final Four at UMass. There's a vacated Final Four at Memphis. You can say that Calipari wasn't named in any of those allegations all you want, but still, he was the head man in charge when those two Final Fours were vacated. So to say that Calipari is completely innocent of everything, now I think you're being a little flippant. But the bottom line here is that these are the salad days of Kentucky basketball. Even if they've only won one championship under Calipari, these are still the best of times. Because I don't think anybody else around here wants to go back to the Billy Gillespie days or the end of the Tubby Smith era. But as far as the game last night, Kentucky survives. They do not cover the spread. That's the third game in a row that they have not covered the spread. I enjoyed Brett Musburger not only giving you updates on who covered the spread, but he literally was counting point totals during the game. And believe me, when you're adding up 70-something and 60-something points toward the end of a game, you're only doing that because you have money on the total. Ask anyone who's had a few dollars on the total, and they'll tell you exactly what I'm talking about.
The underdog is howling. Gotta love an underdog when he howls. Ah, yes. A home team getting points. What's better than that?
Absolutely nothing.
So Kentucky marches on, 16-2. Overall, 6-0 in the SEC. Next game will be Saturday at home in Lexington versus South Carolina, who has a monstrous game. Tonight in Columbia versus Florida, the only other ranked SEC team. Las Vegas has South Carolina, a one-point favorite in this game. So usually this would be a spot for our beloved upset special, hitting at 64.3% this year. But we're going to stay away from this one. Florida is ranked. South Carolina's favored. Usually we'll take a team like South Carolina here, but Florida is simply the better team. This isn't a game we want to invest any jelly beans into tonight. There's only one other game that really caught my eye for Wednesday night, and that's Notre Dame, number 15 in the country, against number 10, Florida State in Tallahassee. Notre Dame has apparently pissed somebody off with the ACC because this is their third consecutive road game. Last week, we were against them not once, but twice. We saw them going to Miami. We saw them going to Virginia Tech, playing those games within both of those games within less than 48 hours. And we said, there's no way they're going to come out of here with one win, much less two. And Notre Dame proved everybody wrong and won both of those tough road games. Now they're going to Florida State tonight. Third road game in 6 days. It's got to catch up with Notre Dame eventually. You can't keep playing these road games in consecutive fashion and expect to keep escaping with wins. It all ends for Notre Dame tonight at Florida State. And we have a college basketball pick for another Power 5 game later in the show.
I applied for the job at Bucknell University. I'm not saying I got a bad basketball team. They had a winning season since the French and Indian War. It's one of those jobs where they're telling you what a great job it is. And I told the people on the committee, you know, you won one game last year. You were 1-26. Why do you think this is such a good job? The fellow on the committee said, Coach, you're overlooking one thing. I said, what's that? He said, we've got everybody back from that team, you know? Wow. Am I lucky? The whole team we got back, huh? Guy without thumbs? Yeah, he's back. Yeah, we got off.
Ryder and Sienna of the MAC. Not the MAC, the Mid-America. This is the Metro Atlantic Athletic Conference, the MAAC, not the MAC. Ryder and Sienna got together last night, and you knew this was all screwed up from the opening tap because they attempted to play with a 35-second shot clock. With about 2 minutes left, there was a fight on the court. Two players were ejected. Both coaches got technical fouls. And then with 10 seconds left and trailing by 10 points, Ryder called a full timeout. Not exactly the best sportsmanship on Ryder's part. And keep in mind, Ryder was leading by double digits in the first half of this game. So what happens after the game? Sienna coaches walk towards midcourt to shake hands, but the Ryder coaches pull a Buddy Ryan and a Jimmy Johnson. They just walk straight off the court. No handshakes, no nothing. And then I'm sure you've seen the Sienna coach by now do the fake air handshakes as if he was shaking hands with other people. Here's my thing. Everybody's saying that this was such a funny thing that the Sienna coach did and that the Ryder coach was bitter. Let me ask you this. Let's say Ryder won that game and Sienna lost. A, would the Sienna coach have gone to shake hands? B, would the Ryder coach have stuck around to shake hands? Because things are a lot different when you win. We always say winning is the deodorant that covers up all the stink. Something tells me if Ryder had won that game, there would have been a handshake at midcourt. If it was me, I'd walk off the court when I won before I'd walk off when I lost. Then again, there's no danger of me ever coaching a college basketball team, or any basketball team for that matter, because I'd be betting on the games on the side and I'd get kicked out of the league. So props to the Sienna coach for giving us the highlight of the day, and the Ryder coach for being bitter to the end, the kind of characteristic we love here on the bottom line.
Your mama's so stupid. I told her it was chilly outside. She went and grabbed a spoon.
Ole Miss defeated Tennessee last night in a game correctly predicted here on the bottom line. Ole Miss point guard Rasheed Brooks had a seizure on the court in the second half. At the time, Ole Miss was losing by 5. Ole Miss went on to win the game by 11. So I guess I should be thanking him for having a seizure, but still a sad thing. But still, it's hard to control these seizures. And then yesterday was a complete day filled with college athletes having health issues. The kid from Ole Miss had a seizure. Three football players from Oregon were in the hospital from off-season workouts. Now, that strength coach who implemented these workouts has now been suspended, but there's gesturing on both sides. Some people say it was a very tough workout, but one of Oregon's players came out today and said that it wasn't the coach's fault, it was the player's fault for being out of shape. And he was defending his coach. And he's a wide receiver who I'm sure was in a lot better shape than the big offensive lineman. And then there was an offensive lineman for Northern Michigan who died after a workout yesterday, and he was only 20 years old. Makes you wonder sometimes, these kids give up a lot of their bodies just to get that college scholarship. And if you ask me, it's way too much. Because 20-year-old kids shouldn't be dying. They shouldn't be in the hospital after a workout. It's one thing to have a seizure on the court, but guess what? They wheeled him off the court, and the game kept going on as if nothing happened. That's where we are as a society. That's where we are in college athletics today. Next man up. If you can't physically do it, we'll find somebody else who can. Sadly, that's the way of the world.
Oh, man, looks like he rolled an ankle.
Yeah, let's go to Daniel Sager for an update.
He got hurt. Back to you, Boom.
Ah, good news for college football fans, especially if you're a fan of Ohio State. There's been some turnover at the College Football Playoff Committee this year, and one of the new members of the Playoff Selection Committee is the Ohio State Athletic Director. Huh. That's very convenient. In the three-year history of the College Football Playoff, there have only been two controversial decisions on who got into the playoff and who got left out. The first year of the playoff, TCU should have been in, and Ohio State should not have been in. If you look at any metric, if you look at any way of measuring these teams on ability and their resumes, TCU was a better team than Ohio State in 2014. Yet, Ohio State made the playoff. Now, revisionist history says, well, Ohio State deserved it. They won the championship. That's not how you do it. You can't judge it by the result. Who's to say TCU wouldn't have won it in the same spot? That's not a fair argument. Flash forward 2 years to this past season. What was the big argument on this show? What was the big argument on every show? How did Ohio State get in? Didn't even win their conference championship. Didn't even win their division in their conference. And yet they made the playoffs as a 3 seed over Penn State, who defeated Ohio State during the season and actually won the conference. So in 2 of the 3 years, we've had one controversy in 2 of those years. Both of them involved Ohio State, and both of them favored Ohio State making the playoff. So what happens? Let's just put the Ohio State Athletic Director on the College Football Playoff Selection Committee, because if they've fallen for it the first 3 years of this sham, they'll fall for it again, and we won't even have to worry about it because now we have the Athletic Director on the Selection Committee. Unbelievable. Take your most controversial moments and just favor them in any meeting by bringing their boss into it. I will never, ever understand this one. But the fix is in, ladies and gentlemen. Anytime Ohio State is going to have a close call on whether or not they should make the playoff in college football, it's a lot easier to include them now. Their athletic director's sitting there right in the smoke-filled room. Because don't sit there and tell me, just like in the college basketball playoff tournament selection committee, don't tell me that you put these numbers into a computer and all it does is spit out who should be in, and then you just go straight by that. Don't sit there and tell me that. There's a smoke-filled room. There are agendas at play. There's a lot of money on the tables. So yes, an Ohio State athletic director is going to be on this committee. Bet you don't see a Kentucky athletic director on that committee anytime soon. Just saying.
Randy Savage, let me first of all thank you for allowing us into your home. But what about the allegations from Ric Flair, the photographs, and then Ric Flair saying that Elizabeth, well, let me quote him. Randy, he said, she was mine, Randy Savage, before she was yours. Randy Savage, what are you thinking?
And just what are you thinking? What are you thinking?
By the way, how much does ESPN miss college football? Paul Feinbaum's show yesterday, in which apparently there's nothing to talk about on Feinbaum's show for the next 7 months, because all they talk about is college football, right? So what have you got to say for the next 6 months? Apparently Feinbaum had enough yesterday, and while listening to one of his Looney Tunes callers, he got sick, and they took a quick commercial, and they came back with another host, and Feinbaum apparently got sick on the air and had to go home and get better. We hope he's all right, but I pity Feinbaum because he's pigeonholed that show into nothing but college football, and that's great when it's September, October, November, December, and even early January. But here we are now in mid-January, heading for the end of the month. College football, it's over. You've got to be well-rounded in life. You can't be a one-trick pony in sports talk radio and expect to succeed. So yeah, I'd be getting sick of boredom if I'm Feinbaum. What the hell can Phyllis from Mulga, Alabama tell me about that Roll Tide defense at the end of January? So God bless you, Feinbaum. You're going to earn your money over the next 6 months. For your sake, I hope it passes quickly.
Phyllis, I don't want to upset you here, but Danny Cannell and Mike Greenberg, they're all leaning toward Clemson beating your favored Crimson Tide. What do you have to say to these people who say the Tide is not
Danny
going to win Monday night?
They're out of their freaking minds, Feinbaum.
NFL, Antonio Brown and his Facebook live chat has taken on a life of its own. He issued an apology yesterday after his coach and his quarterback killed him in the media. And then when Patriots coach Bill Belichick was asked about it, he, as always, played dumb, saying he didn't look at InstaChat and SnapFace. There's another one. Don't sit there and pee on my leg and tell me it's raining, Belichick. You know what social media is. You know Facebook and Instagram and all that stuff. You know exactly how it works. You know everything about it. Don't sit there and act like you don't. I'm surprised you didn't say we're on to Cincinnati after this whole thing was over.
Yeah, well, we're on to Cincinnati.
So you mentioned Tom's age at the draft.
We're on to Cincinnati.
Do you think having a 37-year-old...
We're on to Cincinnati. It's nothing about the past, nothing about the future. It's right now we're preparing for Cincinnati.
Okay, do you feel like the talent you have here is good enough?
We're getting ready for Cincinnati.
What is your response?
I'm just asking, do you think you've done enough to help Tom Brady?
We're getting ready for Cincinnati.
More fallout from the Dallas Cowboys dynasty ending over the weekend. I didn't even know it started, but I digress. Jerry Jones reiterated that Tony Romo will win a Super Bowl during his career. Apparently, it's not going to be at Dallas because they're going to trade him this offseason, it looks like. I don't know why the Cowboys are so quick to trade Tony Romo, to be honest with you. Then again, could he have won that game Sunday against Dallas? I don't know. Thing about it is, we'll never know. So if you're Dallas, what do? Maybe get a good year or two out of him, but you always run that injury risk. Or do you keep Dak Prescott, who's shown he can get it done at a much, much cheaper price where you could go out and spend money on other positions? Advantage, Prescott.
Stop. Hammer time.
All these new coaches in the NFL, not only do we not know anything about them, apparently the teams that hired them don't know anything about them either. The new Denver coach, Vance Joseph, who was one time a Colorado Buffalo back in their heyday under Bill McCartney, had to leave Colorado, apparently now it's come out, because he was rubbing his private parts against a woman. That's as nicely as I can put it on this show, ladies and gentlemen. If a schlub like me can read about this, are you serious when you tell me that an NFL franchise like the Denver Broncos can't find out about this before they hire it? It's unbelievable to me. And then another new coach, Anthony Lynn of the Chargers, had his first press conference yesterday. And the first thing he said was, "I'm so happy to be the coach of the San Diego Chargers." And then he yelled an expletive, "I meant Los Angeles Chargers." And that, ladies and gentlemen, is how to get your career off to a rousing start. Look forward to end badly for Anthony Lynn in a couple of years in San Diego. Oh, I'm sorry, Los Angeles.
Now, I see some elements of Red Rover with a little bit of Spud mixed in. And is anyone ever going to blow a raspberry on the quarterback's belly?
No, Stewie, that never happens.
Down goes Brady. And it looks like Williams is pulling up his shirt and having a little fun with his tummy.
Look, he's doing it.
Happy anniversary. Today is the 2-year anniversary of Deflategate. Well, that seems like a lot longer than 2 years ago, doesn't it? That seems like a long time ago. But it's only been 2 years. Tom Brady served a suspension this year for Deflategate over a year and a half after it actually happened. But the best thing that the NFL has to offer in terms of drama for this season would be to see the commissioner of the NFL have to hand that trophy over to Robert Kraft and Tom Brady if they won the Super Bowl. Because if I'm Brady, I slap Goodell in the face right after getting the trophy from him, of course.
And I can't believe it. Major upset. Great wins over Braun.
Book him! He beat Hogan! Hawks are back in the ring! The Genius and Mr. Perfect running! And they have the championship belt with them!
NBA! Carmelo Anthony and Phil Jackson had a powwow yesterday. No pun intended with Phil Jackson. And apparently Phil Jackson wanted to know if Carmelo wanted to really stay in New York or if he would waive that no-trade clause and get him out of town. And Carmelo, being the team player that he is, says, no, I don't ever want to be traded from the Knicks, even though we stink. And yes, they do stink. They're 18-24. Right now, they're 3 games out of the playoffs. And this was an alleged super team. They signed Derrick Rose. They got Joakim Noah. They've got a hotshot young player in Porzingis. What's not to like? Carmelo Anthony ball hogging. That's what's not to like. Somebody's going to go from the Knicks soon. It's either going to be Phil Jackson or it's going to be Carmelo Anthony. And we all know how LeBron James hates Phil Jackson, mainly because of all his comments and the posse words and all that stuff. And Carmelo and LeBron are boys. So who do you think leaves New York first? Yeah, it'll be Phil before Carmelo, which is a shame because Phil Jackson has 11 rings. Carmelo still looking for one.
Your mama's so fat, she look like she's smuggling Volkswagen.
Mama's a big old greasy hoe.
Chris Paul of the Clippers will be out from 6 to 8 weeks with an injured thumb. The Clippers sitting at 29-14 right now, fourth in the Western Conference. But this is a very important player to the Clippers. In the last 2 years when Chris Paul has missed time, the Clippers are 5-12. And we don't get to see Chris Paul play very much because he plays for the Clippers. Before he was with the Clippers, he was in New Orleans. So it wasn't like he was a household name. But the people who look at numbers and the people who look at stats, they know how good Chris Paul has been over his career. He's led the league in assists 4 times. He's led the league in steals 6 times. And if you look at player efficiency rating, I'm going to tell you the players in the history of the NBA with a better efficiency rating for their careers than Chris Paul: Michael Jordan, LeBron James, Shaquille O'Neal, David Robinson, Wilt Chamberlain. That's it. If you look at player efficiency rating, Chris Paul in the history of the NBA is the 6th best player. Now, it's no coincidence that the 5 players just ahead of Chris Paul are all multi-time champions. But trouble and things just seem to follow Chris Paul around. When he was in college, I remember when he was at Wake Forest and they were ranked number 1 in the preseason his last year in college. And they completely underachieved that year. And the last picture you remember of Chris Paul is him punching some dude right in the testicles during the NCAA tournament. And it's hard to believe that this is his 12th season in the NBA. He's been an All-Star 9 times. This year probably would have been number 10. And he's never made an NBA final. Not to mention he's a 4-time All-NBA first teamer. And that went along with the first team All-American when he was in college. But nobody ever brings up Chris Paul when they're talking about the best players in the NBA or the top 5 players in the league. Nobody ever brings him up. And yes, he has a horrible reputation as a whiner and as a complainer. But still, if you don't want to have him on your team, you're a complete fool. Whether it's bad luck, whether he created his own luck, what have you, that's for you to decide. But the bottom line here is, Chris Paul is one of the most underrated players in the history of the NBA. And now, you watch the Clippers absolutely tank without him. They're 15 games over 500 now. Let's see how many games they're over 500 when he comes back in 2 months.
You stink!
Good news for you movie fans out there. There's going to be a 25-year anniversary remake of White Man Can't Jump. And man, if you want to feel old, White Man Can't Jump is 25 years old. I remember going to see that in the movie theaters with my friends. And I was in college. That should tell you how old I am, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, my age starts with a 4. But apparently, the moving force behind this new movie remake is Blake Griffin. And Blake Griffin, if you intend on starring in this movie, I'm going to tell you right now, don't. Just don't do it. This is a great American classic movie. Leave it alone. Let it stand for what it is. Blake Griffin, you are no Woody Harrelson, and you certainly are no Wesley Snipes, unless you smoke a lot of hemp or you're cheating on your taxes. So just leave these 2 guys alone, leave this movie alone, and just go watch the movie again and enjoy it. Although the scene where Marcus Johnson gets in his car, puts on a ski mask, and robs his friend's store when the friend actually knew who it was, probably the best scene in the movie.
All the money.
Don't worry, Sidney. I've hustled a hell of a lot better players than you before. Don't put up no brick.
Would you stop yapping and let brother shoot?
Major League Baseball. Today, the Hall of Fame inductees for this summer will be announced. It appears, and I use that term loosely when it comes to these voters for the Baseball Hall of Fame, it appears as if Jeff Bagwell is going to make it. It appears as if Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens will not make it, but they'll get a steep increase in votes. And it better happen that my man Tim Raines, one of my favorite players of the 80s, who got completely shafted in every way imaginable by Major League Baseball, it appears as if he might finally make it in his last year on the ballot. Now that's the guy I'm rooting for right there, Tim Raines. We're not going to sit here and have a sabermetric battle on this show today, but all I've got to say is if you look at Tim Raines' numbers and how he literally dominated the early to mid 80s when he played for Montreal. Now he did slow down at the end of the 90s, but his body of work in the early and mid 80s with Montreal, you can't find a better player this side of Rickey Henderson in terms of combining speed and run production from the leadoff position. And people say you've got to be great to make the Hall of Fame. That period of time for Tim Raines, he was absolutely great. So my guy that I have a nutty for in terms of the Hall of Fame is Tim Raines. The other guy is Curt Schilling. And the only reason that Curt Schilling is not going to be in the Hall of Fame is because he's a smartass. And he gets on Twitter and he has all these political rants and he has all these things that literally got him fired from ESPN in the first place. And that's the sad thing about baseball. It's not like there's a lot of choir boys in the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame. But the only reason to keep Schilling out of the Hall of Fame is because he's just a jerk and a loudmouth? A guy who spouts off his opinion? Yeah, that's classy. You watch this year. One of these steroid guys, Manny Ramirez or Bonds or Clemens, one of these guys will get more votes than Schilling, and it'll be the shame of a lifetime. Because if you're going to include the steroids guys, you got to include all of them. And that includes Sammy Sosa. Sammy Sosa doesn't have a chance in hell of making the Hall of Fame, and he got over 600 home runs. Yeah, I could go on to this Hall of Fame stuff for a long time, but I want to see who gets voted in today. I'm hoping that Tim Raines and Curt Schilling made it. As far as everybody else, those old fogies that do this voting stuff, they're never going to let these steroid guys in. Or are they?
I heard that. Dynamite drop in, Monty. That broadcast school has really paid off.
Good news for your baseball fans. Today marks the exact halfway point in the offseason. Anytime you have a long, cold winter, which we have escaped so far here in Central Kentucky so far this year, anytime you have a really bad winter, the hope that everyone has is they'll always have the countdown to pitchers and catchers reporting. And I don't know the exact number of days, but it's probably in the 20s or something. But still, great news for baseball fans, and that's what we are here on the bottom line. Spring fever just a little ways off as we reach the halfway point at Major League Baseball's offseason. But I've got a great TV show that's going to tide you over until baseball does start. Our old friend Alex Rodriguez has a new show that's going to be on CNBC in which he travels around the country trying to help former athletes who are now broke. Of all people to get to host this show, Alex Rodriguez is probably the last person that should be hosting a show trying to help former athletes down on their luck.
Words of wisdom. Drop that zero and get with the hero.
We were talking about the movie White Men Can't Jump earlier in the show, and there's another movie that has started filming in my hometown of Atlanta, Georgia, called I, Tonya. And yes, it is about the Tonya Harding, Nancy Kerrigan incident, using that term very loosely, back in 1994. Margot Robbie, you may remember her from a lot of films, especially Wolf of Wall Street, but she has taken on the role of Tonya Harding, and they showed some pictures of her yesterday in costume as Tonya Harding, and man, they have done a great job from the hair to the puffy shoulders to everything. First of all, I wish I was back in Atlanta today because they're advertising for extras, so if you're down in Atlanta listening to this show, go find out where they're filming this movie and get in the crowd, because I sure would. This would be the one movie I'd want to be part of. This was the glory days of the tabloid media, 1994, between Tonya and Nancy earlier in that year, and then that finally died down, and then all of a sudden here comes O.J. Simpson, and it was all over. This is when tabloid media, shows like Inside Edition and A Current Affair, and shows like that, was on every channel, on every network, and all they talked about was Tonya and Nancy, and then O.J. And that's how some of those shows are still on television today. So props So one movie I won't want to go see, White Man Can't Jump. You can't beat the original. One movie I really want to go see, I, Tonya, about Tonya Harding. Boy, I missed my calling. I could have been the next Siskel and Ebert, but I wish I had the hair of Gene Shalit. That's an old school reference, kids. Google that one.
5.9. Tonya Harding is the 1994 national champion.
I want winners.
Greed is good.
Cash, cold, that's what I need.
And now with his picks for today's games, the man who's right 52% of the time, Smooth Jimmy Apollo.
Well, I don't know. Denver.
Woohoo! Denver, yeah!
Winning's one of those rare commodities on Earth that money cannot buy until you called me.
All right, Mac Daddy Stogie time. Our documented picks for the 2017 college basketball season. 55.6% taking dogs against the spread. 64.3% in our upset specials. Both are making you tons of money. And you can find these documented picks at our website, bottomlinelexington.podbean.com. Other than the games we talked about earlier in the show, lots of lopsided appearing games. West Virginia favored by 17 over Oklahoma. Among those, that's a lot of points. I can't lay 17 with anybody. You get the SEC, Missouri heads to Alabama, LSU goes to Auburn. Those are games we can't touch, but we've scoured the countryside looking for a game, and we found it in Lincoln, Nebraska. The Nebraska Cornhuskers favored over the once mighty Ohio State Buckeyes. And why wouldn't they be? Nebraska, 3-2 in the Big Ten Conference. They've actually won a game at Indiana this year. So far, 68% of the money on this game has gone in favor of Nebraska. So why wouldn't we take Nebraska? Ohio State has been terrible this year. They're 11-7, 1-4 in the Big Ten Conference. They're 5-7 in their last 12 games. And against the spread this year, Ohio State is 6-10. So they're not making you any money. Nebraska has covered 4 of the last 5 games that they've played. So yes, we're setting you up for the kill. We're taking Ohio State tonight as a 1.5 dog at Nebraska. Ohio State, they're simply the better team. And people are piling on this 4-game losing streak that Ohio State just had. But let's look at that 4-game losing streak. 3 of those were road games. At Illinois, at Minnesota, at Wisconsin. Those are all tough games. Against 2 teams that are going to make the tournament and another team that still has a chance to make the tournament. And the game they lost was at home to probably the best team in the Big Ten, Purdue. They only lost that game by 1 point. 3 road losses to tough teams in conference and a tough home loss to probably the best team in your conference. So that 4-game losing streak doesn't sound nearly as bad once you actually look inside the numbers. And oh, by the way, this past Sunday, Ohio State beat Michigan State. And talk about a train wreck. Michigan State has become a train wreck. But that's another story for another day. So we're getting a team that the public perception thinks is way down right now. But if you look at the numbers and look at the schedule, they're not nearly as bad off as you thought they were. Against the Nebraska team that at home this year hasn't proven very much. They got blown out by Creighton, sure. They've also lost at home to Gardner-Webb. So if you're going to give us the better team and you're going to give us points, yeah, we like that. We'll take Ohio State getting 1.5, straight up outright winner at Nebraska tonight, and you can take that to the desert and smoke it.
Well, you know, that's how my people like to handle their business. While your guys are out partying, mine are running routes, trying to make a difference.
And that does it for the Wednesday, January 18th edition of the Bottom Line Lexington Podcast. As always, we thank you so much for listening. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at Bottom Line Lex. Email anytime, bottomlinelex@gmail.com. And make sure to like us on Facebook, the Bottom Line Lexington Podcast. Other than that, you're on your own. May the winners be yours.